Okay, hi everybody, and welcome back to LOOMVC, Letters on Occult Meditation Video Commentary. And today is still the 15th of September 2020. We're beginning a new letter, and it looks like a rather long one, some 64 pages. And it's about the use of form in meditation. The use of form in meditation. And let's see here. Several things. The use of form in raising the consciousness. The use of form by the mystic and the occultist, there are different forms to be used, specific forms, and the use of form collectively. I think, you know, in some ways this is going to be a fairly obscure and demanding chapter. Raising the consciousness, the contrast between the mystic and the occultist, special forms, in the use of form, and collective use of forms. So here we are, you know, 100 years ago, about 100 years and 1 month. A whole century passed. Your very natural desire to have me give you in this sixth letter certain specific forms to achieve certain results cannot be acquiesced in. You know, what do we have here? Virgo and the form, the sixth letter. DK gives many hints, but few specifics, actually. Because he must be cautious, obviously. It is so. Let's see if I can make this a little different. Okay. I do not propose to outline for you any forms for careful following. He did this with his group, of course, but that was different. Or with his group of many groups. The risks, as before I have pointed out, are too great apart from the supervision of a teacher at hand to watch the reactions. And apparently they cannot be entirely watched from the inner planes. These forms may later be given. The work is duly planned out for the coming generation of students. This series of letters having its place within that outline, and you know, what is a generation of students? Sometimes seems often seeming longer than the normal biological generation. What I intend to do today is something very different. I purpose to do four things, which we will separately take up and elucidate. These things, if duly assimilated and acted upon, will lead to further enlightenment. Okay, four things. Or undertakings or things. In the occult, okay. If duly assimilated and acted upon, of course, this is always our great challenge. Have we assimilated and have we acted upon the information which we have received? In the occult method of teaching, step by step is given, point by point. Slowly laid before the pupil, and only as each step is taken and each point is grasped, will the next in order become clear. The teacher gives an indication, drops a hint, and touches on some highlight. The pupil follows the point emphasized and finds on thus acting that further light pours in. Another stage appears and other hints are dropped. In joint action and reaction, therefore, the occult student is trained by the occultist. Step by step is given. So we'll kind of use the purple step by step color. I'd like to have a nice violet there, but I don't. Gradualism, a graded series of revelations which lead to graduation after many gradual steps. So he's being cautious, very cautious. And I suppose he changed some methods as he went along. So many things developed, not exactly maybe the way the masters had foreseen. You know, maybe the First World War was said to be the war to end all wars, but it simply went underground. And the epidemic of obsession leading to war continued until it broke out again with German aggression and Japanese aggression. In studying the topic, the use of form in meditation, the four divisions which I seek to place, under which I seek to place the intended data are as follows, and we just read these. The use of form in raising the consciousness, the use of form, he capitalizes it here, by the mystic and the occultist, the contrast between them, I suppose. The use of specific forms for specific ends and the use of form collectively. I am remembering long ago when I read this book and didn't assimilate all I should by any means, that I found the forthcoming section a bit difficult. In the exposition of these subjects, you will see that what I am endeavoring to produce is a just apprehension of the value of forms in meditation, and not the imparting of a definite method. He has to deal at first with the general, and then he may move on to specifics. It's ever the occult way first to deal with that which is general, and then to move deductively, I suppose, towards that which is specific. I seek to show the essential nature of proceeding under law in this, the most important means of bringing about union with the divine and of producing that at-one-ment between the higher and the lower that is the aim of evolution. Now, there have been times when he said that even greater than meditation is the act of service. Sometimes meditation is considered even more important than, or sometimes, let me get it straight now, service is considered even more important than meditation. And that may give us pause, but it certainly has a strong effect on the heart center, the service aspect. I desire to leave in the minds of those who read these words a just apprehension of the relationship between spirit and matter, which is the basis of all work of this nature. We've been told that meditation zodiacally is ruled particularly by the sign Virgo, and it's also a sign in which I am the mother and the child, I God, I matter am. Spirit and matter are included in the work of Virgo. Okay. The method employed by the Logos in this second solar system, second major solar system, is definitely the use of form for purposes of manifestation. The second aspect of divinity is the form building aspect. And that is what we are emphasizing in this particular major solar system. So the use of form for purposes of manifestation as a medium of expression and as the vehicle whereby the indwelling life may grow, expand, experience, and find itself in the midst of form. So this is the case whether the form is an entire solar system, whether it is a human being in his complexity, or whether it is a form built by the human being in his endeavor to realize and to know, a form built for the very purpose of providing a vehicle whereby the consciousness may, by set stages, raise itself step by step to some visualized point. Okay. The use of form for the purposes of manifestation. Okay. And I think we'll bring that out. Well, certainly, you know, the occultist does not shun the form. Sometimes the sixth ray is called the hater of the form because it is the ray of abstract devotion. And we know what happens with the first ray. They frequently are found destroying the form because abstraction is a still more important aspect of their nature, although they do build the strong vehicles to hold the indwelling life on the outer plane. So they do both. They abstract and they build, and they certainly destroy to build better. So this brings us to our first point, the use of form for the raising of consciousness. I'm sure we're all interested in that particularly. Most of us in this field entered because we wanted to see consciousness raised, our consciousness rendered more sensitive. We have under this heading to consider three things: the consciousness itself, the goal towards which it seeks to rise, the steps whereby it succeeds. Well, if the Tibetan had to convince Alice Bailey that he was a rational individual, he's certainly gone a long way towards doing that in the style of writing and in the gradations of the various points. The consciousness itself, the goal towards which it seeks to rise, and, you know, we might call that the specific point of tension. required or intended. Always in our efforts towards improvement, a heightening of the point of tension is desirable, which is not the same thing as the heightening of debilitating tenseness. Each unit of the human race is part of the divine consciousness and is that which is conscious of or is aware of something without itself. We might say, at this stage of evolution, apparently, without itself. Later, some different apprehension. Something which knows itself to be differentiated from the vehicle, which encloses it, or the forms which environ it. That's something. What is that something? You know, let's just say that something is often called that, and sometimes entirely capitalized. I always differentiate because I seem to have three types of spelling at my disposal, between the lowercase that, simply ordinary environmental perceptions, that with a capital T, which is the intra-universal beingness within the universe, and then THAT, all capitalized, which is the ultimate thatness, the ultimate absoluteness, I guess. I've come up with a new name, I call it the Zeronad, not the monad, but the Zeronad. We'll see whether that particular formulation of words yields any insight. If a word, a neologism, some sort of word that doesn't customarily exist, is used, it better lead somewhere. Yep. Now, test. I see I wasn't really plugged in, but I assume because I've seen the little green indicator still rising and falling, that even though this was not plugged in, you've been receiving something. Too many things to remember. At this particular stage in evolution, the average man is simply conscious of differentiation or of being separated off from other members of the human family, thus forming in himself a unit among other units. So this is the I'll do that. So this is the I am stage. And it has to do with arising from keeping the eyes too much upon the personal self. So I exist, you exist, we all exist, we're all different, you know. Later we have to unify that picture and go even beyond unification into sensing a oneness which is not obvious in the form. He acknowledges this and acknowledges the right of all other separated units so to consider themselves. He adds to this a recognition that somewhere in the universe there exists a supreme consciousness, whom he theoretically calls God or nature. So this is the usual apprehension of oneself, the self of others, and deity, which we are not yet calling the self, although it is. And that's a great shock when one realizes that. But many a battle is fought regarding the nature of God and whether God is transcendent or, and in a way, unapproachable, except through supplication, or whether God is God immanent and a transcendent deity who nevertheless is the self. So between this purely selfish point of view, I use the word selfish in the scientific sense and not as a belittling adjective, and the nebulous theory of God immanent, there are to be found numerous stages at each of which occurs an expansion of consciousness or an enlargement of the point of view that leads that self-recognizing unit step by step from self-recognition to the recognition of superior selves, you know, to respect the existence of those who have gone on ahead, to the fitting of himself to be likewise recognized as a superior self, and eventually to the occult recognition of his own superior self. So far, this God immanent idea is pretty nebulous and is only understood when the pairs of opposites begin to become factors in the consciousness of the individual as he works in the hall of learning. He's learning not to be the ignorant, isolated lower self only. He comes to recognize his higher self or ego as his true self, and from that stage passes on into that of the group consciousness. And here he realizes first his egoic group and then other egoic groups. And we might say, you know, LOM page 39 gives us an idea of these different groups on the monadic, atomic, Buddhic, and higher mental planes. From 49 through different multiples of 7 until we reach descendingly the 7 on the monadic plane, and then the 3 on the logoic plane. So these are differences in the degree of selfishness, because the self is changing. The apprehension of the self is changing. What kind of self do you think you are? You know, when you name yourself, what are you? Simply the personality or some of these higher states of being until we reach maybe identification as the monad, and really as the core of the monad, the life, the being of the monad, and not the vehicle of it. So where do we stand, you know, just for a moment? How do we live? Do we live recognizable by others simply as a personality, or when they see us and when they deal with us, do they recognize a soul or some other type of higher self? I think the best way to be recognized is to recognize those higher grades in others. And then into the egoic group or groups of ever diminishing number until we reach from the 7 to the 3 to the 1, which includes all, which maybe can be considered the solar logos as the home of that which has this home within the sun, initiation, human, and solar. Now, so these egoic group recognitions, there's a sense in the heart of inclusiveness and love and unity and a similarity of purpose and identicalness, identicality of enterprise, not necessarily of method, but of that towards which the group personnel strives. And that's a ladder, and we are somewhere along the lines of that ladder. This stage is succeeded by the recognition of the universal principle of brotherhood. Well, maybe by the end of the Aquarian Age, the last 720 years or so, and under Venus, that recognition will come about. I mean, Venus may be, I think, the solar plexus center of the solar logos, but it's having a lot to do with the heart of the solar logos, increasingly so, and probably will replace Jupiter in that regard. It involves not just a theoretical recognition, but a merging of the consciousness into that of the human consciousness in its entirety. So, you know, in the Secret Doctrine, third fundamental, all souls are at one with the Oversoul. And this is really that development of consciousness which enables a man to realize not only his egoic group affiliations, but his place in the human hierarchy on its own plane. And what can we call it? Either the Buddhic or the monadic planes. He knows himself, in fact, as part of one of the great heavenly men, even though at first on earth, even though at this time on earth. This expands later into an almost inconceivably vast point of view, that of his place in the grand heavenly man as represented by the Logos himself, in this case, the solar Logos. So there is a reward involved in knowing one's place. It is its own kind of reward to know where we actually fit is important and astonishing, I guess, at first. And the universal principle of brotherhood, and if he says universal, it's going to be at least solar systemic, and if we take the word universe as the grand entirety, then we'd be speaking about the brotherhood of all things within the self-become universe or self-becoming, a merging of the consciousness into that of the human consciousness in its entirety. Yeah, and that would be a very desirable outcome. Always when we can learn the role we play and where we fit, what we have to do, and thus what our purpose is, it's a great reward. It is a reward along the line of purpose and how the life force is to be expended. There's a congruence that goes with it. I was just reading about Gandhi. He says, well, I'm going to forget it, but when a man does and thinks and believes, in a similar manner, a congruent manner, an aligned manner, this is the equivalent of happiness. I just saw it, but I'm forgetting the exactness of it. The place within the human hierarchy on its own plan. So we're on our way to that kind of realization. And he knows himself, in fact, as a part of one of the great heavenly men, even though presently he is working through Earth, there will be a home planet. It's pretty much the same way that we may be on loan to a training ashram, or maybe an ashram which for us is not final, but eventually we will return to our home ashram. And, you know, so it is here. We are Earth beings, but probably we took our origin as monads from one of the great and sacred heavenly men, you know, being Mercurians, let's say, the way the Tibetan seems to be, or a Venusian, the way the Christ and Master KH seem to be, the Buddha being a Mercurian in a way, so much Mercury symbolism associated with him. And then, you know, there will be Uranians and Saturnians and people deriving from the, as monads, from the seven sacred planets. So eventually, and what do we have to be for this to happen? This expands later, how much later, and at what degree of initiation, into an almost inconceivably vast point of view. And of course, there's a lot of relativity here. Think about think about the fact that our little solar system and our sun are simply as a crystal compared to some of the larger lives. And yet we talk about a perspective here as being inconceivably great. So that tells us, you know, a little bit about how big is big. Well, I think we gradually grasp the question of magnitude, relative size and intensity within our systems, galaxies, and even the entire universe. Both are true, you know, all things along the scale of hierarchy, ascending and descending, have different magnitudes, and yet all things are the same in a certain sense, and the magnitude of each perception is identical with the magnitude, with the magnitude of every other perception. So this is as far as we need to go for our purposes, for this series of letters aims not at the development of cosmic consciousness. We are not concerning ourselves here with cosmic logo, which have solar systems or stars as their chakras. It will be apparent to you that all these stages have to be taken systematically and that each one has to be mastered step by step. Thus we are called upon to be patient. It is necessary first to grasp that the place where the expansion takes place and the realization has to be felt has to be finally the thinking, waking consciousness. That's one thing to talk about things mentally and another thing to realize them. And that's such an important discrimination. Let's just say to think intellectually is distinct from realization. And we are looking for both. And clear thought will lead to realization eventually on the Atman plane. You know, it's the fifth power from above and the third from below. And, has its own point of tension that makes it possible. The ego on its own plane may be well aware of the unity of consciousness with all other consciousnesses, and be realizing his group as one with himself. But until the man in the physical plane consciousness has raised himself to that same plane and is likewise aware of his group consciousness and likewise regards himself as the higher self within the egoic group and not as a separated unit, it is of no more use than a recognized theory is of use when not carried out in experience. And this is a key paragraph. And it's something we've been repeating in various ways as we go. The ego on its own plane, and that maybe what we should say is on the higher mental plane, wherever the causal body is situated, the consciousness of that causal body may be well aware of the unity of its consciousness with all other consciousnesses and be realizing his group as one with himself. And there's that word again, realizing, well, spelled with an S because it's sort of quasi-British English here. Realizing his group is one with himself, but until the man in physical plane consciousness has raised himself to that same plane and is likewise aware of his group consciousness and likewise regards himself as the higher self within the egoic group and not as a separated unit because, higher selves, are not deluded into thinking. They are separated and separative units. It is of no more use than a recognized theory. is of use when not carried out in experience. So always he is advising the carrying out experientially, otherwise we just have the intellectual formulation, which is certainly lacking something in the depth and immediacy of possible experience. The man has to experience these stages in his physical consciousness and to know experimentally and not just theoretically that whereof I speak before he is deemed ready to pass on into the succeeding stages. The whole matter resolves itself into the expansion of the mind until it dominates the lower and into the faculty of abstract conception, which results eventually in physical plane manifestation. It's as if to say a plane of abstraction is our normal systemic plane from which the possibility of physical manifestation is directed. And this is even more so regarding the cosmic ethers and the Buddhic plane, whereon many chakras are found that contribute to manifestation in the dense physical body of the solar logos and of the planetary logos, the lower 18 subplanes, the lower 21 subplanes, especially 21 in the case of the solar logos. To know experimentally and not just theoretically that whereof I speak before he is deemed ready to pass on to the succeeding stages. It means making your highest theories and ideals demonstrable facts, and it is that blending of the higher and the lower and the equipping of that lower until it proves a fitting expression for the higher. It seems, you know, very much a question of common sense to make real what we hold as theory and to make practical that which we hold as theoretical and maybe a nice intellectual formulation, but still a pale reflection of the reality of realization. It is here that the practice of meditation plays its part. The true scientific meditation provides graded forms whereby the consciousness is raised and the mind expanded until it embraces, you know, and what will it embrace? Meditation is coming in here to render the abstract concrete, the higher points of tension, capable of working through lower points of tension. Here that the practice of meditation plays its part. And this is really scientific meditation, not just, you know, necessarily sitting quietly for development, as it were. Some of the early theosophical errors, but naturally we have a lot to learn, and it's natural that we would fall into error at first. The true scientific meditation is what we're after, and he's going to give us some kind of idea. Well, he's been, you know, giving that to us as we go along, but what that is. So graded forms are involved and the mind is expanded until it embraces, and that's that nice second ray word, embrace, include, its family and friends, its environing associates, the affiliated groups, its egoic group and other egoic groups, that man of the heavens of which the egoic groups form a center, So planetary logoi, we might say, right? And then the grand heavenly man. And I'm going to put this all in the embracing color, which is the blue. Maybe indigo is too dark, but there's a beautiful blue here. And I think we can put it that way. So in meditation, let's just say meditation can accomplish following conclusions. To effect this, certain forms will be laid down that working along the line of a man's ray will teach him in graded steps to do this. This is why the book Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, is so important. The old commentary methods are there given for the various ray types. You will note that I have dealt with the consciousness itself and the goal it aspires to, and have thus dealt with our first two points. And this brings me, you know, so what are the points? Consciousness itself, that's one point, right? And then the next is the goal. That's the other point. The goal that consciousness tries to achieve. This brings me to our last subsidiary heading, the steps whereby attainment eventuates. I guess we begin to see, you know, someone like Master DK, who has studied for thousands of years and meditated for thousands of years. And certainly even, you know, our meditation is not equaling what his was, even 3,000 years ago at the time, or maybe 2,500 years ago at the time of Pythagoras, whom he assisted, apparently, being in very close relation to Pythagoras. Well, it takes a while, but things are speeding up, and the upward spiral does tighten. So our last subsidiary heading is the points, or the steps to be taken in order to achieve the goal, which our understanding of consciousness reveals. Each man who enters upon occult development and who aspires towards the higher has passed the stage of the average man, the man who regards himself from the purely isolated standpoint and who works for what is good for himself. Well, we see a lot of that in the world today, and people struggling for what look like very partial or foolish ends, but they are necessary. They are steps along the way, and we see them fight with all their might to preserve personality prerogatives. And we have to bear that because, you know, we were in that kind of position, and those who are now our teachers were to us then as we are to these who are strictly personality-centered right now. We cannot deplore the condition in which they find themselves. We can only hope wisely to help elevate that position rather more quickly than would be the case if we simply criticize or if we ignore. The aspirant is aiming at something quite different. He seeks to merge himself with his higher self and with all that is entailed when we use that term. So certainly we are aspirants, aren't we? Certainly that much. And we do seek to merge ourselves with our higher self. And we can say soul and later triad and later monad. But then you won't be an aspirant anymore. You'll be, well, always an aspirant in a way, but something still more. The stage beyond that, stages beyond that, and all their intricacies are the secrets of initiation, and with them we have not to do. So basically what he's doing is he's confining himself to an upreach toward the soul. He confines himself to an upreach towards the soul. And let's see how upreach should look. Unpreach, no upreach. And maybe with a hyphen will do the job. So there are many, many steps along the way, and what it is wise for us to do is to know the steps which are appropriate to our development. And we can learn about many other things, but the practical way is to know what is the next step ahead for ourselves. What initiation perhaps lies ahead, because every true disciple is being prepared for initiation, and what evidences we have that such an initiation does lie ahead. Aspiration towards the ego and the bringing in of that higher consciousness with the subsequent development of group consciousness very directly concern all those who will read these letters. So at least he's giving us at least he's telling us what minimally we have to achieve, what we have achieved, at least minimally where we stand. And we do have to be, while not preoccupied with these steps, nor have we have not to be insouciant, you know, careless about them either, because then we will not, as he says, receive the occult accolade either way, if we're overly concerned or insufficiently concerned and focused. It is the next step ahead for those upon the probationary path. It is not achieved by simply giving 30 minutes a day to certain set forms of meditation. It involves an hour-by-hour attempt all day long and every day to keep the consciousness as near to the high pitch attained in the morning meditation, as possible. It presumes the determination to consider oneself at all times as the ego, you know, not just the personality, not just the dweller, and not as a differential or differentiated, interesting use of the word, personality. Later is the ego, comes more and more into control, it will involve also the ability to look upon oneself as part of a group with no interests and desires, no aims or wishes apart from the good of that group. It necessitates a constant watchfulness every hour of the day to prevent the falling back. This is a very powerful paragraph. All the requirements that we must fulfill to achieve the higher alignment. Looking upon oneself as part of a group with no interests and desires, no aims or wishes apart from the good of that group. It necessitates a constant watchfulness every hour of the day to prevent the falling back into the lower vibration, which often happens, doesn't it? It entails a constant battle with the lower self that drags down. Let's see if I'm... Yeah, okay. That drags down. It is a ceaseless fight to preserve the higher vibration, and which is the point I am aiming to impress upon you. The aim should be the development of the habit of meditation all day long, and the living in the higher consciousness till that consciousness is so stable. So stable that what? That the lower mind, desire, and physical elementals become so atrophied and starved through lack of nourishment that the threefold lower nature becomes simply the means whereby the ego contacts the world for purposes of helping the race. So, you know, this is vitally important. Requirements. Okay. Requirements for what? Requirements for what? Bringing the higher consciousness in. And the development of group consciousness. This is a potent and long paragraph. And may we somehow learn to deal with it and carry it out. So carrying on just a little bit, perhaps. This is going to be a long, long letter. In doing so, in so doing, he is accomplishing something that is little realized by the average student. He is building a form, a definite thought form that eventually provides a vehicle whereby he steps out of the lower consciousness into the higher. A kind of Mayavarupa that acts as his intermediate channel. And these forms are usually, though not invariably, of two kinds. So if he is able to carry out these requirements, he is building a form. So carrying out REQS's requirements listed above builds an intermediate useful form whereby to ascend to a higher point of tension. Gosh, I kind of really want to look at this again. It's long, but aspiration towards the ego and the bringing in of that higher consciousness with the subsequent development of group consciousness is very directly concerned all who read these letters, and his own students were working on this and did not fully succeed, but the seed group project is long until 2200. So it is the next step ahead for those upon the probationary path, I guess, who want to become true disciples. It is not achieved by simply giving 30 minutes a day to certain set forms of meditation. That would be outward and mechanical, and would lack continuity. It involves an hour-by-hour attempt all day long and every day to keep the consciousness as near to the high pitch attained in the morning meditation as possible. So, you know, thus the necessity of the morning meditation. It cannot be evaded, even though it can sometimes be shortened. He said to Foster Bailey, you know, who was not doing lengthy meditations, somehow being on the first ray, he had abbreviated many things, but he said, your meditation is, even though not lengthy, of the most effective kind, maybe when compared with some of the other students. It presumes the determination to consider oneself at all times as the ego and not as the differential personality. So how do we regard ourselves? Really? You know, when you think of yourself, what are you? Can the vehicles really sort of fade away, at least in their elemental appearance and functioning? And can we somehow identify as the soul, or the soul consciousness, at least in the higher mental plane? Later, as the ego comes more and more into control, it will involve also the ability to look upon oneself as part of a group with no interests and desires, no aims or wishes, which are apart from the good of that group. And this, this is not easily achieved. I think we can, if we examine our wishes and desires, I think we can see, no, it is not easily achieved. It necessitates a constant watchfulness every hour of the day to prevent the falling back into the lower vibration. And so the question, am I falling back now in terms of what I am thinking, feeling, or doing? It entails a constant battle. Oh, are we up for it? Constant battle with the lower self that drags down until, of course, it is overcome and a Maya Virupa takes its place. It is a ceaseless fight to preserve the higher vibration. And we might say, How many of, that's strange, how many of us are willing to engage in this ceaseless fight? And which is the point I'm trying to impress upon you, the aim should be the development of the habit of meditation all day long. And the living in the higher consciousness until that consciousness is so stable that the lower mind, desire, and physical elementals become so atrophied and starved through lack of nourishment that the threefold lower nature becomes simply the means whereby the ego contacts the world for purposes of helping the race. Well, very beautiful ideas, and you know, I did somehow want to re-emphasize them a little here, because after all, these are the main points. And in if he does this, he's building a form, a definite thought form, that eventually provides a vehicle whereby he steps out of the lower consciousness and into the higher. A kind of a Mayavarupa, it's a will-created body, you know, not the Mayavarupa of the fourth or fifth or beyond initiate, but a kind of Mayavarupa. And these forms are usually of two kinds. Let's see, I think I have to keep going because method one, and method two. Okay, so what are these forms like? Transitional forms, a thought form, which takes you more rapidly where you want to go because it's been built solidly. The student builds a form daily with care and love and attention of his master. To him, the embodiment of the ideal higher consciousness. He lays the outline of this form in meditation and builds in the fabric in his daily life and thought. The form is provided with all the virtues, scintillates with all the colors, and is vivified, first of all, by the love of the man for the master, and later, when adequate for the purpose, is vitalized by the master himself. So, you know, this is the beginning of the master in the Master in the Heart meditation. At a certain stage in development, this form provides the ground for the occult experience of entering into the higher consciousness. At a certain stage, okay. So it's not an idle construction. It has its bridging purpose. The man recognizes himself as a part of the master's consciousness, you know, an outpost of the master's consciousness. And through that all-embracing consciousness slips into the egoic group soul consciously. Yeah. So this is a very esoterically occult method, spiritually occult method. The form provides the medium for that experience until such a time as it can be dispensed with, and the man can at will transfer himself into his group and later consciously dwell there permanently. This method is the one most largely used and is the path of love and devotion. And, you know, as we see and maybe have experienced, the very first kind of meditation we get in the arcane school is the Master in the Heart meditation. Then there is another method. In the second method, the student pictures himself as the ideal man. He visualizes himself as the exponent of all the virtues, and he attempts in his daily life to make himself what he visualizes himself to be. So this is used by the more mental types. This method is employed by the more mental types, the intellectuals, and those whose ray is not so colored by love, by devotion, or by harmony. 2, 6, 4. It is not so common as the first. The mental thought form thus built up serves as the Maya Virupa, as did the other. And the man passes from these forms into higher forms of consciousness. I think that's so important. These forms are transitional and are bridges and allow passage into a higher point of attention with its appropriate higher consciousness. As you therefore see, in building these forms, certain steps will have to be taken, and each type will build the form somewhat differently. Well, just as long as we know how this goes, this is not so colored by, if I had something orange, I would demonstrate it, but I don't. That orange color being the very root of, I'm going to just use the third ray color there. You know, the green and the orange from the previous solar system, and they are colors connected with the mental vehicle. The first type will start with some beloved individual, and from that individual will rise through the various other individuals to the master. And I think that does really work. Sometimes we have that love, devotion, feeling for someone, and we can transfer it to the master. And I think, you know, we have to attempt it. We preserve, you know, what we find in the beloved individual, and without waste and without dissipation, we transfer it to the master. The other type will start with meditation on the virtue most desired, add virtue to virtue in the building of the form of the ideal self until all virtues have been attempted and the ego is suddenly contacted. So this is the let's call it we proceed here by the path of accumulated virtue. I often talk about consciousness in the causal body as being consciousness surrounded by one's virtues. So we have to experiment with both and see which is best for us, and probably this will have a lot to do with our particular soul ray. I think that, you know, when you're on the second ray, you can use either one. There is love, yes, but there is also a kind of wisdom. It's a love wisdom ray, you see. And tomorrow we will take up, maybe it will be tomorrow, the same subject from a different angle and study the difference between the occultist and the mystic. Starts to get very interesting, doesn't it? Even though it's one of the foundational books, it really is foundational. So here I've gotten this ready for our next occasion. Probably won't be tonight, but it will be from 1:47 and onward, maybe tomorrow, hopefully. And it's going to be form as used by the occultist and the mystic. We've been looking at consciousness and its goal here. We've been looking at bridging forms. We've been looking at two methods to create the necessary forms. We've been looking at continuity of vigilance to maintain the high point of tension that it was achieved in the morning. And we've been looking at the means of raising by greater degrees the refinement of the consciousness and its inclusive properties. Quite a bit here, really. Yeah, so we've been dealing mostly with the use of form in the raising of consciousness. Whether that form is small or large. And here are the four factors we're going to be dealing with. The first one, the use of form in the raising the consciousness, and the use of form now coming up at our next occasion by use of form by the mystic and the occultist. Such important foundational material. Okay, friends, so that's going to be it for right now. And we thank you for showing up and offer from the communications group many blessings, lots of love, and the wish for progress both in your understanding and in your service. So we'll see you at the next occasion, whatever day that happens to be, whether it's later on tonight or whether it's tomorrow or whenever we can manage. See you then.